So, Dean, we're going to talk about The Deer Camp, a memoir. Is it fair to call it a memoir?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everything in this book is stuff that really happened.
And as I read it, it strikes me that I think it would be fair to say this book is very much about place and how place affects who we are as we move through place. Is that a fair way to describe it?
It most definitely is. The book is about a camp, a hunting property in Michigan, and it becomes a character basically in the book. And I wrote the book because of the effect, the profound effect that place had on my family, and basically gave us, my brothers and I, a father again that we hadn't ever really had.
You know, memoirs have got to be, I think, one of the hardest things to write. I do writing myself, and when I had to do a magazine article about my father, who's an artist, I thought this would be easy. Gee, I know this topic inside and out. It was the hardest thing I ever had to write. How does memoir work for you? Was that hard?
It was extraordinarily hard. I have written several other books in the past, as you know, mm-hmm. Several of them about Michigan subjects. And because they weren't about my family, I think, now in retrospect, maybe they took me a year mm-hmm. to write with all the research and all that. I just could not get my head around this one. I started in 2013, and it took me 5 years to finish it. And the reason why, I noticed there's a theme through this book, The Deer Camp, mm-hmm. of eco-psychology, which is the way our brains and the environment are connected.
Yeah.
And how that affects our psyche. And all I wanted to do was write about that science. Mm. And I kept putting huge long quotes about the science in the book and citing all of these masterful people and psychologists who have talked in depth about this over the last 30, 40 years and avoiding the story. And my editor would read it and my agent would read it and my wife would read it, most importantly, and say, something, you're avoiding something. And it was the family story because it's so fraught. And I knew that I would have to get into very difficult stuff about my dad.
You did.
In order to write the story and to make in order to explain the change in him and how that profoundly affected our family. And I sort of pushed it away for 3 years and then started getting into it. And it was as difficult as I had feared. Talking to my mother, you and I are probably going to talk more about this, but part of the story is that my father had a lot of affairs and was a very difficult person to live with at home. And my mom was kind of, do we have to get into that? And then over a series of sessions with her, looking through family photos and stuff, she started to talk about it a little bit, and then we just talked about all of it.
And
that was not easy.
No. Well, they say writing can be therapeutic, too, once you start you're talking to the page, you're talking to each other. I've tried little tidbits of memoir, and like I said, it's been extremely difficult for me, too. One of the reasons being that you don't want to offend the people you love. You're close, even though you guys rub up against each other with your brothers, with your parents. Well, your dad's gone now, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So maybe that made it a little easier, or was that your starting point?
That was when I knew that I actually could write this when he did pass away. But I had planned to write it before that because the remarkable change that came about in him was something that took my brothers and I just completely by surprise. And when that did happen, after a year or so, I started really ruminating on it and was even bringing it up to my brothers, like, this was a remarkable thing, and I really want to write about this in some way. And to do so, now knowing what I know now, I would have had to ask very difficult questions. And my father was really wonderful in the last, 5-6 years of his life, but I don't know how that would have gone, honestly.
Well, that's a gift. Not everybody gets that turnaround in life, and to be able to get close to people that you struggled with before. In fact, there's a part of your life that you go through and tell people, oh, my dad's passed away, when he hadn't.
Yeah. This book starts in 1989. I'm already 25 years old at that point, and I have sort of, I didn't flee, but I have purposely left Kalamazoo, where I went to Kalamazoo College and was close to my family. I left because just couldn't take it anymore, the proximity to what was going on with Dad, and it was still really difficult. And my mom had just divorced him. Finally, we had been wanting that to happen for so long, and I needed to get some kind of a fresh start. And it's so horrifying for me to think about now, but when I was in New York, I would just kind of blithely tell people, they said, what about your folks? Oh yeah, my dad's dead. And wow, I'm a parent now, and have been for a long time. My son's 19, and I have two stepsons who are 18 and 14, and the idea of that just makes me want to tear my teeth out. Because how could I get that far from that man who was so important in my life? He was. And in 89, when in 89, when he called me, he said, hey, Kimo Sabe, which is how he often addressed us. Hey, I got this new cabin. I got this new deer camp, and we're going to put a cabin on it. And I really want you to come. And I was holding the phone like at arm's length away from my head, going, it's the dead guy on the phone, like calling me to, extend this invitation like nothing had ever happened.
And you resisted that for a while.
A long time.
Yeah.
I told him on that phone call I would not come out there, and that's ridiculous. My brothers who lived in Kalamazoo were slightly more intrigued and did go a couple times to his place, but basically we boycotted the place for about 10 years.
Yeah. So talk about how place changes people. How did that happen? And not just for your dad, it changed all of you.
Yeah. We had grown up, first of all, I have two younger brothers, Brett and Joe. They both live in Kalamazoo. And we all love Michigan. And we love the way we grew up. There was nothing about our experience with our dad that really tended to undercut the way we enjoyed growing up in the outdoors, because we grew up in rural Michigan, southwest of Kalamazoo, out near Mattawan. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic. Even while it was happening, we knew how great it was.
I call it free ranging, and we don't do that with kids anymore. We kind of helicopter them, but you grew up like free range children, wandering and until sundown.
Absolutely. And we hunted and we fished and we enjoyed every kind of, thing like motorcycles or any other thing that got you out into the fields. Mm-hmm. And that's where we spent our life. And so we had this very strong sense of place, and it was made even more so by my father's family. The Kuipers family is absolutely obsessed with habitat.
Mm.
I can't overstate that to any degree, because my father had five brothers, and they were all outdoorsmen and sportsmen.
Yeah.
In a big way, all hunters, fishermen. If there's water skiing, like if there's something that you do outside, they do it. And our family dialogue amongst all these people, all of my 20 cousins and everything on that side of the family, is all about animals and habitat. That's all we talk about.
Yeah.
And if you try to bring up something else like politics or whatever, you just immediately get shut down and somebody says, what about that fox that dug under the house? And that's where the conversation goes. And because of that, our awareness of a good place is just super, super high. We sort of walk the world like rangers, noticing everything that like, oh, look at that juneberry tree. Oh, the berries are heavy. That's going to be a good year for the grouse. And here's the acorns. Oh, the acorns are not looking good this year. Maybe the deer are going to eat corn.
Oh, and that's wonderful, though.
Yeah, that is the sort of subtext going on as I walk through the world every day, even here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And when my father you know, we had all three of us boys had a tough time with our dad, and it drove me into books and intellectualism on a lot of levels. And my brother Brett became a real master, sort of woodsman, hunter, fisherman, motorcycle guy. And my brother Joe took it very hard and really wanted a great relationship with his dad and did not get one and ended up drinking and had a lot of trouble.
At least the first part of your book, there's a lot of Joe's suffering and going through rehab and the family suffering with him.
He was sort of the one in which all the family problems manifested.
Yeah.
And which I felt terrible about. And as an older brother, didn't know about some of it. Mm-hmm. And because Joe, just like, you know, he was free ranging drunk.
Yeah.
And wandering around Kalamazoo and taking acid and doing stuff that most of us didn't know about. And
well, addicts are very good at hiding addiction. So, you know.
Exactly. And luckily, you know, just so everyone knows, that, you know, tailed off in his early 20s and he kind of got a handle on it and has had a great life. But when my father called after the divorce and said he had this deer camp, mm-hmm. It's almost like that was an insult, because we knew he knew that we would be obsessed about that. Like, oh, what is the place like? What does it look like? What's there? Are there porcupines? Are there deer? Are there fishers? Are there, you know, otters? Because we knew it was a swampy place and remote and in a place full of deer. Mm-hmm. And that almost felt unfair because it was like, no, we're done with you. And now you're dangling this place like, oh, this is the way we're supposed to come back to you, is you've got this amazing place now, which we never had before.
Yeah.
You know, 95 acres in Oceana County, surrounded by 120 acres of federal land, and basically in the middle of a 2-mile square plot that's inaccessible to anyone except us. And I mean, that's just incredible. Nobody has that.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
So your question was about, you know, how did place affect us and our family? And, we decided not to participate there with my dad and two of our uncles who co-owned the place with him, and our other cousins, and everybody had a great time there for about 10 years. And then they all got, their families got too big, and my dad ended up with the place alone. And we went in 97 to hunt a few birds with him. My brother had always known there's a few grouse there or suspected. And we went and got a couple grouse out of the place and just had a great time together.
Yeah.
And Brett said, you know, Dad, it can be like this all the time. Let us work on the place. Let us do some habitat work here because it needs it. And there's some old pine plantations that should come down, and we should do some work here and try to make this place great. And if we can do that, we'll all participate, and, you know, we'll be here with you.
Yeah.
And he hemmed and hawed and hated that idea and didn't want to touch anything, and basically told us that he didn't trust us. And we continued to butt heads again for another 5 years or so,
mm-hmm.
until the we took down finally the pine plantation. You know, we basically quit. And then he said, okay, you guys do whatever you're going to do, because I want you to be here. And we took down that pine plantation, and the next spring trees came up, and like, of course they would, but a riot of trees came up. You know, all the aspens and the black cherries, of course, came up first, and then all the oaks and the beeches and the red pines and white pines and a few Norway spruce and all kinds of stuff just came pouring out of the sand. And when it did, we got a new dad.
I love the metaphor here.
He greeted me that spring. I came out to see it with a hug and a kiss and I love you. And that he hadn't said that in, you know, since I was baptized, probably like, you know, 25 years or something, and wouldn't let go of me. And he was so emotional and with all my brothers too. And he said, look at this place, it's fabulous. You guys did this.
Yeah.
And somehow restoring that 7 acres of trees, restored his faith in the land and restored his faith or created new faith in us.
Yeah, it's like removing the past to make room for new growth. Like I said, the metaphor here is just rich.
Yes. Yeah. And it really was the place.
Yeah.
We could have done something else together. We could have, you know, restored a boat or done some other built a building or done some other project with him that could have had this kind of result. But you have to have an object and a place in which to pour all that attention and to make that connection with one another. And for us, it was the dirt.
Yeah.
We were obsessed about the sand on this piece of property because it was not in good shape. You know, it had been a farm once and exhausted, and it was a sand farm, basically.
Yeah.
And we thought about that sand, and we argued about it, and we poured our intention into that sand, and we worried, and my dad was so... He was so convinced that nothing would ever grow and all this. And then the sand spit out all these trees. And it was kind of like we all said, oh, thank you. And the entire family dynamic changed.
Yeah, yeah. I just love that. I'm sitting here with a big grin on my face. That's just such a wonderful thing, you know. We're kind of circling back to where we started, how place affects who we are. And sometimes making a change in place makes a change in you. So as we kind of wind this up, I wonder what your thoughts are about, we're going through this time now where some people are rediscovering nature. Some people are very worried, climate science, climate crisis, and all that. What are your thoughts on the importance of keeping alive that connection to place, about not losing it, or we might lose ourselves, metaphorically and otherwise, maybe literally. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think it actually is literally. I believe that our minds are connected to nature in ways that we don't understand, and that most of our what we think of as quote unquote our minds is really being created out there, outside of us, in the environment. When I was growing up, a very bookish person, I read a lot of religion and I read a lot of ecology as a younger person. And in college, I read a lot of a fellow named Gregory Bateson. Mm-hmm. And he was an anthropologist. He was married to Margaret Mead, and an anthropologist and also a cyberneticist, early computer person, and an ecologist.
Yeah.
And he said, someone asked him once if a computer thinks, and he said, no, the loop of trial and error is between man and the computer and the environment. And he said, if you just take the computer out of that, thinking is not something that happens inside your head. It's the entire system that thinks is man plus environment. And I read that when I was probably 20 or something. And, you know, my little dean mind just exploded and said, of course, all the stuff that I experience as me in some Cartesian sense inside my skull is only a teeny little micro sliver of what's really me, because most of it's out there.
Yeah, it's just this bouncing back and forth with all that's around you. Yeah.
Exactly. And it is absolutely essential that we, not just that we try to maintain, you know, the natural world as it is. All of us are so concerned about that at this moment with climate change and what we're about to lose.
Yeah.
But the sense that it is us. No matter what remains, or no matter how things change, since it looks like they're going to change a lot, that is still us. It's not something external to us. It is us. And our minds, too. So, you know, another thing that Bateson said was that, you know, Lake Erie could be driven insane if we threw too much of our trash in it.
Yeah.
So let's not make ourselves insane.
Yeah. For us to be healthy, we have to keep our earth healthy. Yeah.
Yes. And at least understand that that is us. And as it goes where it's going to go, you know, there we go too. I think that's the important connection. And I try not to grieve about that by simply saying, well, whatever it is, that's what I'm going to be too.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do everything I can to try to maintain the natural world in its as much of its current state as we possibly can. But the change is inevitable, and we should be aware and managing that as much as we possibly can.
Well, on that very important thought that I hope sinks into everybody, we'll wind this up, although I think I could talk to you for a long time, Dean. and the Thank book you. Is not just wonderful material, but you're a wonderful writer. I need to say that, too. I can feel that you studied poetry in Kalamazoo College. It comes through.
Indeed, the wonderful Conrad Hilbery was my
there
mentor.
There you go.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for giving us a moment of your time. And the book is The Deer Camp.
Thank you so much, Zinta. It was a pleasure.